Welcome to the Talking Tigers podcast with Andy Burcham.
Charlie Trotman, like his father, came to Auburn to play football. After a brief career in the USFL, Trotman settled into his career as a commercial developer. He received a call from Jim Fife gauging his interest in becoming the color analyst on Auburn football broadcasts. After winning a tryout at the A-Day game, Trotman began a partnership with Jim in the booth, broadcasting some of Auburn's most memorable games in the 80s and 90s. Trotman is a master storyteller, and many of those stories center around growing up on his father's farm south of Montgomery. Charlie Trotman tells some of those stories in this Talking Tigers podcast. Welcome to the Talking Tigers podcast. So very glad to have, and I apologize that he hasn't been on the podcast sooner, former Auburn quarterback. He was longtime color analyst on the Auburn network. Charlie Trotman joins. He is a friend. So glad to have you on the podcast today, Charlie.
Well, Andy, it's my pleasure, man. I am so proud of you. I can't believe that I'm on a podcast. This is my first podcast that I've ever done. So I'm really excited.
Well, glad to have you with us. Let me just kind of preface, because Charlie is one of the all-time great storytellers that I've ever been with. And when we were making road trips together with Quentin Riggins and Jim Fife, I always wanted to be in the same car with Charlie. Not that I didn't want to be in the car with the rest of the guys, but I wanted to be sure I was in the same car with Charlie because of the stories that Charlie would tell of his playing days, of just everyday life, and especially his childhood, because they were just the great. So I would be laughing the whole time I was with Charlie.
Oh, well, I tell you, Andy, it was fun. And I told stories about my childhood because my dad had such a unique group of employees. Dad would go to the prison. He would get a farmhand who was going to be put on parole, and he'd give him an opportunity on the farm. And one of those characters was a guy named A.C. Singleton. And A.C., the way that I described A.C. to people is A.C. would tell me about bar fights that he would get in, and he would say, "I didn't have to hit that man but once." Then he said, there's one fella who had a head hard as a coconut. I had to hit him twice. And so we had all these stories that we would tell that came really originated from some of those characters on the farm. And they were fun to tell. And there was another story where another fella, his name was Alas Kittle. You know, a long time ago, they had milk trucks, barber's milk trucks, and they had ice cream sandwiches. He was going to get my little brother Woody an ice cream sandwich, and he wanted to buy just one. And the guy wouldn't sell him just one. He told him he had to sell him the whole box. And Alas Kittle said, I don't believe you really heard what I said. I'm gonna buy my little friend here an ice cream sandwich if you don't sell it to me." And he pulled out a knife and flipped it open, a little switchblade, and he said, "I'm just gonna have to kill you."
I was hoping you'd tell that story.
we had a lot of fun on the farm growing up.
What did it say about your dad that he would give these men a chance? I mean, yeah. a lot of folks would stay away from that, Charlie, but your father decided that, and he needed the help on the farm, but he gave these men a chance.
Yeah, he did. It was interesting, Andy, because Dad was friends with a guy who headed up the prison system, and he knew about these parolees. He knew what skill sets they had, and these guys were great on the farm. Now, you know, running cattle and doing all the things that had to be done on the farm, bush hogging and baling hay and all the things that Dad wanted these guys to do, they were really good at.
When did football become an important part of Charlie Trotman's life?
I started playing early when I was about 8 years old. And my mother tells the story that I was back to receive a punt. And, you know, the punts weren't very good when you're 8 years old. So the ball was bounding, two or three times, and I picked it up. And to me, I was going to run. I was going to go from the left side of the field to the right side of the field. And I was running, but people were chasing me and I looked like I was running backwards. And then I got tackled. And so my mother asked me after the game, she said, "Why'd you run the wrong way when you caught the football?" And I said, "I didn't run the wrong way. I was trying to get around those guys."
All right. Where was home for you, Charlie? Where'd you grow up?
Grew up in South Montgomery County on Woodley Road on a farm. Dad had come from Troy, Alabama, and married my mother, who was from Montgomery, Alabama. My mother's grandfather was the mayor of Montgomery, where Gunner Air Force Base gets its name. Mayor Gunter was the mayor of Montgomery for 32 years. That's my great-great-grandfather.
Charlie, where'd you play high school football?
Went to Jeff Davis High School. It was a new high school, relatively new, opened in 1968. And then I was there, and my last year was 76. We had a really good team. Andy, it was incredible. We were 10-0 my senior year. They had a mythical national championship. We were ranked number 3 in the nation, and we were upset in the state playoffs, 14-13. A bitter, you know, in high school. We had a good, really good team, but we didn't quite make it to the championship. West End, who was also undefeated at the time, but they were not ranked. They were ranked below us in the state.
Yeah. When did you start playing at the quarterback spot, Charlie?
I was a running back when I was really little, you know, peewee football and so forth. There was a coach who lined up all the players and he wanted to see who could throw the football. And so I was the one that could throw it the farthest and had a better spiral on it, I guess. And so he put me at quarterback, and that was in the 7th grade. And I was a backup quarterback in the 8th grade. And then I was the starter in the 9th grade. And then at Jeff Davis, you know, Montgomery was weird, Andy, because we didn't have freshman year in high school. The 9th grades were in what we call junior high. It was 7th, 8th, and 9th. And then high school was 10, 11, and 12. So in the 10th grade, I started at defensive back for Jeff Davis. And then my junior year and my senior year, I started at quarterback.
When did you start hearing from colleges? When did you start hearing from the recruiters, Charlie?
Well, it's funny because actually when I was a sophomore, you know, the coaches back then, Andy, it was antiquated to what it is today because they had films that they actually had to box up and send out to, you know, colleges. Coach Livings came to me one time. Billy Livings was our coach. And he said, "Charlie," he said, "I sent a tape up to Notre Dame and I was really sending it up there for one of our linemen, but they picked you out and they wanted you to send a questionnaire back to them and so forth." So actually in the 10th grade, I got a little attention at defensive back, but we ran the veer, which was an offense that kind of different. Bill Yeoman at University of Houston had perfected it. And my coaches went out there, the high school coaches went out there to a clinic and came back and instituted the veer. We ran that my junior and senior year. And because of that, there were a lot of colleges running it. So I got recruited by most of the colleges that were running either the wishbone or the veer.
When did you hear from Auburn?
Heard from Auburn my junior year. It was funny because there was a coaching change going on at Auburn. Shug Jordan had announced that he was that 75 was going to be his last year. And so there was a guy on his coaching staff named Pap Morris. And Coach Morris recruited me my junior year. And then my senior year, it was P.W. Underwood who was my recruiter. And so, Andy, I tell you, there was one time when I kind of got mad at Auburn because Auburn offered me a scholarship, but at the start of my senior year. I accepted the scholarship on the spot. Dad played at Auburn in 44 and 45. I had grown up an Auburn fan. I loved Auburn. I was orange and blue. Everything was rocking along. And about midway through the season, P.W. Underwood called me up and he said, "Hey, I understand that you and Stedman Sheely are good friends. I said, we are. He plays for Dothan, and I play against him in every sport. And he said, well, I wanted to see if you'd call him and help us recruit him. I said, absolutely not. I'm not calling Stedman. He plays quarterback. I'm not going to try to recruit Stedman to Auburn where he'll compete against me. I said, Coach, that's unfair for you to ask me to do that.
Well, I just thought you might want to. He's a friend of yours. I thought it'd be fun for y'all to play together. And I said, no, not at all.
For a little bit, I ended up accepting an invitation to go to the University of Florida. They were running the Wishbone and went down there over Thanksgiving. I came close to committing to Florida because I was kind of upset with Auburn a little bit. That told me that they were not convinced that I was good enough to win the job. That was the way I interpreted that. I ended up sticking with Auburn, and, you know, the rest was history.
Talk about your dad a little bit. Because so many of your stories that you told us through the years, your father is in there prominently all the time. So if you would just talk about him and his influence on your life, not only in football, but just his influence on your life, Charlie.
Several things that I want to say about Dad. Dad was a good football player. He was in a peanut field in Pike County, Alabama, and Wilbur Hutsell came and recruited him to play football for Auburn. And Dad, you know, loved Auburn and the track coach. He was recruiting for the football team. Dad, you know, played both ways, you know, played center. But he didn't get to play much, Andy, because he played behind an All-American named Tex Warrington. Dad said Tex Warrington was like 26 years old, had come from the Army, you know, overseas, and was tough as nails. And he said, you know, Dad was like 180-pound center and linebacker, and Tex Warrington was about 240. And so Dad, he was the kind of guy that he said, son, look, your reputation is more important than money. It's more important than, you know, gold. It's more important than anything that you have, and your integrity, your reputation, and that kind of thing. So he taught me along those lines growing up. And people love Dad because Dad, he didn't have a hobby. His hobby was people. He loved people. He wanted to find out, like he would want to find out what Andy Burcham's history is and who his family is and all that kind of stuff, rather than go play golf or something like that. It was just what Dad did, and people loved him for it. And, you know, Dad was not a pushy guy as far as athletics. He was at every game, but he didn't like make himself known to the coaches. He didn't try to, you know, put a word into the coaches as to how to coach or anything like that. He wasn't one of those kind. He just enjoyed it. He enjoyed the camaraderie of other family members, you know, other dads and moms that had children that were playing ball. And, you know, when we played at Crampton Bowl, we would fill Crampton Bowl up. It would be 20,000 people there for the high school games. It was a great time to be playing high school football. Of course, as a quarterback, it might have been fun to be like a Doug Flutie and throw the ball 50 times a game. That would have been fun too. But you know, that was the offense I was in.
All right. You come to Auburn. That's a tough time for Auburn.
Yes.
Let me catch that a little bit. It's a tough time because of what's going on the other side of the state. Talk just a little about your time at Auburn. I mean, because you played on some really good teams that are probably aren't given as much credit as they should be, and with some really good players. I mean, guys that played, including yourself, at the next level.
You know, we came in 1976. We were Doug Barfield's first recruiting class, and we had guys in there like Freddie Smith and Joe Cribbs and Jimmy McKinney and George Stevenson and Tim Stowers and, you know, just a plethora of really good athletes, people that Charles Woods, and, you know, people that ended up playing a lot of football for Auburn. We thought that, you know, we were going to be a class that was going to really take Auburn to newer heights, same place that Auburn had been at certain times in the past. But in 1979, my senior year, we went 8-3, and we lost a heartbreaker to Wake Forest when we had a 38-20 lead at halftime and didn't score a point in the second half, had a couple of touchdowns called back. We lost to Tennessee, and that was really the only game we were outplayed. And then we were going to play Alabama, and Alabama won the national championship, the Southeastern Conference championship, of course. And we came within an eyelash of beating Alabama. We were 8-3. We were on probation. And that's another story, Andy, because we didn't know what we were on probation for. There was no ESPN. There were no stories about Auburn and what they had done or what had happened. Whatever had happened before. We were told the spring of my senior year that we were going to be on probation and couldn't go to a bowl game. And man, it was like getting, gut punched. That was all you wanted to do, is have the kind of season that you could go to a bowl game and enjoy a trip like that with your teammates and coaches and so forth. But anyway, we couldn't play for that. So that, the Alabama game was kind of our bowl game. And we had come off a big win at Georgia. We came, like I said, within an eyelash of beating Alabama. And we thought we had turned things around.
It was always interesting when we'd go on the road, and when I'm going to talk in a minute about the crew that we were with. But it was always interesting, especially when Stan was doing games with me for pay-per-view and tape delay. And every once in a while on a Friday, you guys would be down on the field and still throwing the football around. Charlie would always be rolling and throwing, and Stan would always just be in the pocket and throwing.
It's a funny thing, because the Veer offense really didn't have a lot of drop back passes. We had 3-step drops, and we threw a lot of quick outs and, out and ups and things like that. But we would generally come off a fake and kind of half roll into a throw. A lot of my passes, were like that. And I was as comfortable throwing the ball on the run as I was throwing the ball still. So, of course, Stan had a gun, and it was fun to throw the ball with him down there. I remember throwing the ball specifically at Florida, and Stan, he had a rifle. And it was fun to try to keep up with it.
All right, Charlie, your career's over in 79. Your college career is over in 79. What's the next step for you at that point?
I had no interest from any teams as far as being a quarterback, obviously, at my size, at 5'10 and 190 pounds. Nobody was interested in me as a quarterback, because I averaged throwing the ball about 8 times a game. And so there was no film on me or anything like that for throwing the ball much. So I decided that I wanted to try out as a defensive back. So I got an invitation to go up to the Patriots. It was an invitation-only camp. And I went up there, Andy, and, for some reason, I always was fairly strong. I could bench press really well. And I did the bench press. They put like 225 on the bench, and you have to bench press it so many times. And, I did, for my size and my weight, I think I did like, 18 reps or something like that, which is pretty good. It's not like 30 reps that an offensive lineman does, but it was pretty good for me. And I ran a good time. I had run a 4.53. And then we did a drill that my biggest asset was my quickness. And we did a quickness drill that was basically an agility type thing. Sure. Where you go, like 5, you go 10 yards, then you turn and go 10 more yards. Then you have to redirect to come back. And it's like a 40-yard deal. It's, moving and changing directions. Anyway, did real well in that deal, in that drill. So I thought they were going to, they were going to invite me to their regular camp. I had a coach come over to me, and he made this statement to me. He said, "Charlie, son, you can run like hell and you're a great athlete, but you're just too small. We can't bring you into camp. You're just too small." So I went back to law school. I thought, well, I'll just do something that's productive while I'm still working out, and I'll get another chance. And so I went to law school and the USFL came about. And so that for me was like a perfect opportunity because Birmingham had a team. So Raleigh Dotch, who was the former offensive line coach for the Pittsburgh Steelers in their heyday, got the head coaching job and they had a open tryout. I went to the open tryout. I ran the second fastest time in the tryout and they signed me. And so I went to camp. I made the team. They moved me to safety and they all of a sudden one day we were at practice. I had played in the first couple of games and did well. I played well. I also returned kickoffs and I didn't return punts, but I was on the punt return team, but not the back guy. Anyway, long story short, they brought in a guy who had played for the Tampa Bay Bucks and put him at the starter at safety and ended up putting me as just a special teams guy. And so I had seen another guy go to the coaches and say, look, I'm not happy with this situation. He was the wide receiver. And he ended up playing the next week and had a good game. So I did the same thing. And the next day when I came in, my locker was cleaned out and they had cut. The end of the story is that that was my third year of law school. I got out of law school. I was working for Jim Wilson and Associates and the blue-gray game was in Montgomery. And a new team was being formed in the USFL called the Pittsburgh Maulers. And so I tried out at Maxwell Air Force Base where the gray team was practicing for with a couple of guys that were on the roster for the blue-gray game. We all tried out and I got signed by the Pittsburgh Maulers. It came time for me to leave Jim Wilson and Associates, and I was going up there as a safety. But Pittsburgh, we had the USFL had a draft, and the University of Pittsburgh had an All-American free safety, and they drafted him. And so I thought I had a guy tell me, he said, Charlie, look, you love football, and because you love it so much, you're going to give up valuable work time in your career to go and play and be probably a special teams player, and your career is going to take a hiatus for a few years because you're going to be playing football and you're not going to make a lot of money, and it's not your best choice. And so I kind of took that to heart and decided I'd just start my career.
What was that career, Charlie?
It is real estate development, shopping center development, build public shopping centers and have built Walmarts and Home Depots and Lowe's and theaters and, just a lot of different things over my career. But I started my company, the Trotman Company, in 91. My son just graduated from Auburn in May and just came to work for me. He majored in finance and just came to work for me in June. So I'm really thrilled about that.
Charlie, when did you find out about the opportunity to go work in the booth with Jim Fife?
Well, that's an interesting story too, because I was in law school and back then, Andy, we had payphones. And I actually called Jim back. I had gotten a message to call him. I called Jim back from a payphone at law school, and Jim asked me if I wanted to be the color commentator for the ball games because Pat Sullivan had been hired by Pat Dye to be the offensive coordinator and go on the field and coach. And so I said, sure, I'd love to do that. And so I came to the spring game, Andy, thinking that I was the color commentator. Well, it was a tryout. And there were four other guys that were trying out with me. We all drew straws and each of us got a quarter. And I was lucky because I got to listen to them for two quarters and I got the third quarter. As it ended up, I had a decent third quarter and Jim chose me to do the broadcast, you know, I tell the story that somehow just completely oblivious to the fact that there was going to be a tryout, had come to Auburn that day thinking that I was the color commentator.
I know what kind of impact Jim had on me as a broadcaster, as someone in the business full time. What kind of impact did he have on you as someone that this was, it was important to you, but it wasn't your career, but it was something that you did and always did extraordinarily well.
Well, Jim was a pro, you know, that was his life. If you were going to be in the booth with Jim, you were going to have to either, you know, buckle up and get ready for the ride, or, you know, you weren't going to be in there. And so I knew I had to be prepared. I knew that Jim was not going to accept anything less than something that was close to perfection. And he was such a kind of nuts and bolts guy when it came to doing the actual broadcast that he taught me, you know, the things that I needed to know, when to talk, when not to talk, you know, the way that you could bring color into the ears of the listeners and have them kind of feel like they were there and a part of the broadcast. You know, he helped me understand what that business was all about. I just kind of took a lead from Jim and let him mold me into the guy that he wanted me to be as his color commentator, because I knew there were times when I shouldn't talk, when something really, really big happened. It was Jim's call. I didn't need to be in the background saying things and whatever. Now, there may have been a time or two when I couldn't help it, but he was iconic, you know, to the, as you're becoming to the Auburn faithful. And, you know, he was very persuasive in the things that he would tell me. And I listened very closely and tried to follow his lead.
Let me ask you about a couple games that you're a part of, Charlie. The first is the 89 Iron Bowl. I mean, here's a guy that grew up as an Auburn guy, never saw the Iron Bowl any other place but at Legion Field in Birmingham, played at Auburn, always played at Legion Field in Birmingham. And finally in 1989, you're in the booth with Jim, and finally Alabama comes to Jordan-Hare Stadium on a pristine day for football and two really good teams. What was that day like for you, Charlie?
I have never been a part of a whole scenario, Andy, whether it was Tiger Walk or whether it was the throngs of people that were outside the stadium that didn't get in to see the game, whether it was the atmosphere of the crowd during the game. The whole town was electric for that whole week. It wasn't just the experience of the game itself. It was the heartbeat of the town of Auburn and the Auburn people that just appreciated so much the fact that Pat Dye was able to get Alabama to come to Auburn. And I am so thankful that I was a part of that. That atmosphere in 89, when Alabama came for the first time, I don't know that you could recreate that atmosphere. You know, even in 13 with the kick six, you know, some of the games that Alabama and Auburn have played in Auburn that have come down to the wire, or the 09 game, I remember that Auburn had a great chance to win. And then, you know, the 19 game or 17 game and the 19 game, you know, those were great atmospheres, but I just don't think they can compare to that initial, the phenomenon that it happened to be that Alabama and Auburn were going to play in Auburn.
I remember the 93 season, being a part of that crew, being so fortunate to be a part of that crew, and Nick DeSanders on fourth down with Patrick coming right off the bench with the Iron Bowl. Nick DeSanders the next year at Florida to win that game. There are so many that I remember, Charlie, but your perspective is different. You were in the booth. You were the color guy. So other than that 89 game, all right, that 89 Iron Bowl game, which probably will never be surpassed for a number of reasons, what are some games that come to your mind?
Well, you know, that game when Terry Bowden took his team to Gainesville, and wasn't Florida ranked number one? I think they were. And Terry Dean was up for the Heisman Trophy, and Auburn, they had such a great game plan against Florida. And I just was amazed at that game and how excited the Auburn people were to beat Florida in Gainesville. And that, you know, Nick Sanders' pass was unbelievable. It was beyond belief. I mean, for Auburn to be able to go down to Gainesville in the Swamp and be able to beat that team like they did. And, you know, I remember that ended Terry Dean's playing days at Florida. That was the advent of the Werfel era. And then I remember some of the Florida State games. They were great. I remember some other things too that were out of the ordinary. We played Mississippi State. I can't remember exactly the year, but we were over there, and there was a tornado that hit the hotel that we were staying in about an hour after we all left to go to the stadium. And I remember Quentin Riggins, and we all came back to the hotel to get our cars, and Quentin Riggins' windows were all blown out in his SUV, and he had to ride back, I believe, in a tattered car that needed a lot of repairs. But that was a scary time. And there were so many games that I remember. The Georgia Tech game, when, you know, Jim Fife, he was saying Tillman, 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 but he lost his balance. And we were way up above the stands in that press box. And I thought Jim was going to fall out of the booth. And I was holding the back of his coat. And Jim was completely off balance, yelling Tillman, Tillman, Tillman.
I remember a time at LSU where one of their fans tried to jump up into the booth.
Oh yeah.
And you were about to defend the honor of the Auburn network crew.
I was. And I remember the LSU broadcasters who were right through the pane glass window. They didn't try to stop them. They didn't try to help us. I think they enjoyed that. As the guy was trying to climb through the booth, I equated it to, in the Army, somebody trying to take over your position. And, you know, they were trying to come into our bunker. And so anyway, Jim was, as the guy was climbing in, Jim was going, hit him, hit him, hit him, Charlie, hit him. And I was looking out, and there were like 5,000 people that had turned around. And, you know, LSU was a tough place to play. People were shooting us birds and giving us the arm, and, you know, it was dangerous. You know, there were no policemen around, and the broadcast booth was in among the fans.
Right.
It was not, you know, away from the people being able to get into your booth.
Charlie, the importance of the Friday night dinner on the road. What are your memories?
Oh, wow. I love those. That was the most fun probably on the whole trip. I remember everybody enjoying each other and telling stories, having fun, laughing a lot. And Jim Fife loved to laugh. He had a belly laugh that when he really thought something was funny, that I enjoyed watching him laugh. I enjoyed all of us have a good time together. But I think the Auburn network was a special, very special group that it would be hard to recreate that group. And I don't know that I enjoyed anybody or any group any more than I did the Auburn network. I mean, those were great days, great times.
Charlie, why'd you step away? It certainly wasn't your performance. You were as good as anyone in the booth. Why'd you decide to step away?
Well, my children, I have three children, two girls and a boy. And they, when I would leave on an away game weekend, Andy, my girls would pull my pant leg and say, Dad, don't go. Please don't go. And they would end up having like a little t-ball game or a soccer game or something that I would miss. And they kept begging me to, you know, be there with them on the weekends. And and you know, Dad, you could help coach us, and you know, that type thing. And it just got to me, Andy. I felt like I was going to miss my children's little times with T-ball and peewee football, and you know, all the different things that not want to miss if you were going to be a father. I had to weigh that against, you know, my love of doing the Auburn games, and it just, family won out.
Tell me about your family.
Whitney's my wife. Ellen Rogers is my oldest daughter, who just had my first grandson, Hudson. Mm. She is in Montgomery, married. And then my daughter, Barbara Ann, who's my middle child, is in Birmingham, and she is going to school to be an X-ray technology or X-ray technician. And then little Charlie just graduated from Auburn and is working for me. So everybody's good. God has been very gracious to us and blessed us. And we're so thankful that, you know, our family's close. And, you know, there are a lot of families that, you know, have had so many, as you're well aware, Andy, the tragedies that have happened to certain families. And I just admire you so much for stepping up for Rod Bramlett. And I can't imagine, you know, a tougher time to go through. And man, Godspeed to you and everything that you do.
Charlie, I can't tell you how much I treasure those years with you on the Auburn Network and those times together, just to laugh and to tell stories and admire the work that you did. I'll never forget the prep that you would put in, those file folders that you would make for those spotting boards that you used. I mean, it inspires me today in the work that I do each and every week for Auburn football. I value our friendship first and foremost. And I love you, brother, and I wish you nothing but success moving forward.
Well, Andy, thank you so much for having me on your podcast. Again, it's my first podcast, so I really enjoyed it. I love you, brother. I always have. You're a dear, dear friend. I'm always here for you if you ever need me. So you please call on me if there's ever any need. And Andy, I'm always in your corner. Boy, I'm proud of you for what you're doing in the broadcast booth and who you've become. And I just can't tell you what a great thing I think that is.
Nice to have you on the podcast today, Charlie. War Eagle.
As I said, Andy, I don't want to have to hit you twice.
War Eagle, Charlie.
War Eagle, Andy.
For Charlie Trotman and the Talking Tigers podcast, I'm Andy Burcham. Be strong and be courageous. War Eagle.